Blog Talk Radio.
Denise Griffiths is your partner in success. Tune in each Friday as virtual assistants, industry expert, web developer, and online entrepreneur Denise Griffiths interviews industry experts from one end of the internet to the other. These expert entrepreneurs freely share their business building knowledge and provide practical guidance that will show you how to build and grow your own very successful business, be it online or traditional brick and mortar. Now, ladies and gentlemen, your partner in success, Denise Griffiths.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I am your host, Denise Griffiths, and this week I am welcoming back Theodore Henderson, author of The Wisdom Compass, a 31-day journey to wisdom-filled living. Excuse me, I'm very raspy this morning. When Theodore was here last, we covered a lot of business tips and advice. He is an excellent entrepreneur. He's somebody that I have a lot of respect for as a business person, but we only lightly touched on his book, which to me is a very important book. I was with him the whole time he built it. I mean, I was working with him. I was encouraging him, and he'll tell you that I was nagging at him to get this book out of his heart and onto paper. And I'm proud of it just because it came out. I mean, it's just such a beautiful book. So here's the thing. There is no shortage of self-help books or programs that promise to make you more successful. They're everywhere. But what if the key to a wise and successful life was actually written thousands of years ago? Inside the book of Proverbs, Theodore discovered secrets that he has used to become a successful entrepreneur, a powerful businessman, and a passionate mentor. He devised a 31-day journey that is based upon the teachings which have influenced the spiritual and personal development of countless people. And now he wants to share those secrets with you. Theodore, good morning and welcome back.
Well, Denise, thank you for having me. It's an absolute pleasure.
And you can tell people I nagged. Go ahead.
And she nagged, and that's good. Because sometimes you need encouragement in your journey. So thank you.
See, this is why you are you and I'm me. I say nag and you say encouragement. I like yours better.
But see, when it comes from a good place and from love and respect, it's encouragement.
There you go. I'm so glad to have you back. Listen, before we get started, and I don't know why I'm raspy, but I am, please share a little bit about who you are, where you're at, and where people can find you on the web.
Oh, absolutely. Well, as you mentioned, I don't know if you mentioned it specifically, but I am the author of a book called The Wisdom Compass, Your 31-Day Journey to Wisdom-Filled Living. And I was blessed that it made it to the Amazon bestseller list in its category. So that was fabulous. And so I speak a lot about that book and about the techniques and concepts in it, which we'll talk about a little bit during the show. I'm also a certified career advisor and consultant to small businesses and people who are interested in advancing their career. And by definition, that in my case makes me a professional speaker and trainer. So I'm out in public quite a bit and work from the platform and do training quite a bit, speaking about personal development, career development, have a particular passion for certain aspects of social media as it pertains to advancing your career and also advancing your small business activities. And I probably came by that because I was in information technology and other types of technology over about a 20-year period. So the love of technology came with me, even though the technology didn't come with me. So the technology career didn't come with me. And that brings me here today. I've been blessed to be an author, and I'm always trying to get better at it. And I have another book that will be coming out in September. Haven't finalized on the name yet, but it will be more about how to basically organize yourself around success principles, and those principles are things that are easily easy to grasp. So that's a little bit about who I am. My main website is www.theodorehenderson.com. And I have a site dedicated specifically to the book, which is www.thewisdomcompass.com. That is thewisdomcompass.com. And there's a special setup there for folks that call in from the show so they can actually get a special deal of getting an autographed book and a copy of the recording that I did. I have the autographed book. Oh, there we go.
I do. Listen, I have a very special place in my home for all the autographed books of people who I know and admire and respect and have done business with. And it's growing. And yours is honestly one of the very first ones that was in that pile.
Well,
and I call it a pile. It's not. But you're in there with some great company. You're in there with Larry Wingate. You're in there with Jim Tunney, who is the dean of NFL referees. I mean, you've got some great company in there.
Well, tell them to sprinkle some of that success dust on me.
Actually, I should say
those are successful guys.
Let me reverse that. They're in some good company with you in that stack of books. But yeah, I mean, I am so proud of this book. I mean, I watched it come out of you literally. I mean, I watched it being birthed. I don't know if that's the proper thing to say to a man, but I remember we had some very, very in-depth talks about this book and why it was so important to you to get it out and to get it out to the masses and just let people understand your journey to get to there. And I would like to, if you don't think it's too personal, talk about the journey that led you into crafting this book, because I remember being absolutely fascinated by it. And I don't know if you recall this or not. You would be talking about it, and I mean, the passion would just come. And I would be standing either in my kitchen, because a lot of times we would talk on Saturday mornings, and I would be standing in my kitchen, and I would forget to turn the bacon over because I was so entranced by what you were saying. So you are the reason I burnt many breakfasts, I have to say. But
I will tell you, Denise, I have never gotten a higher accolade than I forgot to turn over the bacon. So.
Yeah, do you know how bacon, that's so important. Bacon is so important. But honestly, I mean, I would listen to you, and I would say to you, Theodore, why aren't you sharing this? And that's what I mean about nagging. And thank goodness you did. So I would love for you to go way back before I started encouraging you and just kind of walk us through how you got there. I mean, how did this book come to you? Why was it so important to you? I mean, you're a business person, but you're writing about this. I mean, there seems to be a separation there.
Well, absolutely, and I certainly don't mind sharing. And let me go back to keep it short and sweet, but I'll try to make it. I'll try to make the point. I actually came to Bible reading late in life, mm-hmm. and you know, it's thankfully at the source of a lot of things in life. Sometimes it's one's parents. And my mother was a source of mine because when she was sick and I was taking care of her, I would come over to visit. And this was back before the days of 24-hour news cycles, across every station and such.
Yeah.
And I would generally come over in the mornings and visit before I went to work or started whatever project I was going to do. And she enjoyed junk TV, and someone who's, you know, sick at home, you know, they're entitled to junk TV. I didn't want to watch junk TV, and I gave up on trying to convince her not to watch it.
Right.
So I actually started watching the morning business programs and news, and then at some point they started to, you know, drift away around 9, 10 o'clock in the morning Eastern time. And there wasn't really a lot that was interest to me, and I started actually coming across television ministers, who I didn't really realize after the scandal of the PTL ministry many, many moons ago, were still on.
Which one was that?
That was Tammy Faye Baker and her husband, Jim Baker.
Oh. For us, Jimmy Swaggart.
Yeah,
oh, my gosh.
So those folks, I thought that the television ministry was dead and off, and so I wasn't that big a television watcher, so I didn't really realize it was on. So I actually started watching television ministers, and I was fascinated with their ability to communicate not only to the audience they had live, because most of these were recordings of most of what they showed on television were recordings of them in front of live audiences, and then they, you know, repurpose the television for the television audiences. And so I would actually watch these. I'm fascinated with their ability to connect with their audiences live in a semi-church-related fashion, considering it was, really being filmed for TV, in essence. But also their ability to actually generate that message in a compelling way to someone sitting, who is sitting in front of a television set. That was really the most fascinating piece of it, because you always felt like they were chatting with you, speaking with you. It was a friend talking to you, that sort of thing, even though, clearly intellectually you understood that wasn't necessarily the case. And so I started listening to the messages, and I actually started reading Bible, scripture, and other faith-related books, because they would throw out scriptures and references. And being skeptical, of course, I had to go check it out.
That's the research part of being a business person.
And so I started reading everything, because you can't read something in isolation.
No.
In just a couple of sentences when it's part of a book, because obviously there's a greater message there regarding whatever the topic might be. And so that's how I actually started reading the Bible. What that did was it gave me a tool when I ran into some major hurdles in my life, which was my mother took a major turn health-wise for the worse. And that's a very tough thing to deal with as a child of an elderly parent. As many listeners probably are living that themselves. It's not certainly not something that I'm the only one that experienced. And then I was going through a negative point. My marriage was going to head towards divorce. And then I was in a job that I was unhappy with that I was going to be leaving. So you really had this perfect storm, this trifecta of terror. And you really want to, you just can't, and I talk about this actually in the book, you can't belly up to the bar and talk to the bartender and whoever is inebriated next to you and expect that is going to really help you, because it's not.
You sure?
It gives you a headache. Although if that's the first three drinks, it's not going to help. But
no kidding.
So I actually turned to some of the biblical reading that I was doing, and some of the spiritual and I'll just call it positive mental attitude type reading as a source. And then specifically, I had heard on a couple of occasions that if you're having trouble organizing your life, then you should read the book of Proverbs for the month, because there's 31 chapters and 30 or 31 days in a month. And of course I said, well, okay, I'll give it a shot, can't hurt. And
see,
I really didn't know that until I
met you. I had no clue.
Yeah, I had no clue either. Proverbs was something I heard about, but I thought it was just kind of old wives' tales or something. I didn't realize it was such an important part of the biblical tradition. And so I started reading it, and I actually did it multiple times over multiple months and did notice and understand changes in my life, because it directly affected how I started to make decisions. And it really became crystal clear to me that my faith and beliefs were actually an ally in my life and not an adversary. It wasn't something I had to work around. It was something that I should be working with, and things turned around dramatically. It doesn't mean you don't have challenges, but now you negotiate and interact with them differently. And I decided to go find a study guide of some type to help me with it. And I couldn't find the book I was looking for. And someone said, well, why don't you write it? And so this is one of those times where of the 5 million times that we hear, why don't you do something about it, that I decided, yeah, I'm going to write that book.
Right.
And so we're here today being interviewed by Denise Griffiths. That's the road.
it's
a long-winded explanation, but that's the road that led me onto the interview today.
Right. Well, this and many, many other interviews, I mean, you've been all over the place. I mean, you've interviewed with Jack Canfield. I know I've seen videos with you with Jack Canfield.
Yes, I have. and that's eye-opening. So much to learn from him and some of his contemporaries and writing partners like Mark Victor Hansen.
Mm-hmm.
And you just—it's amazing. You just never stop learning. You never reach the point where you know it all, which I guess is a blessing in and of itself that you don't close your mind off. So.
Exactly, because the minute you do that, you might as well just go to bed and not get back up.
I'm going to write that down. I'm going to write along with the baby.
I'm telling you, I have ruined many, many pounds of bacon because of you. I'd be going, oh, crap. Remember that? We'd be on the phone, and all of a sudden you'd hear me say, oh, crap.
That's what it was. It was the bacon.
That was the bacon, yeah. It was a pitiful thing.
And I'm proud.
Audience knows, I have a cat named after you. His name is Henderson.
That's right. And sometimes I couldn't tell who you were screaming at.
You weren't supposed to say that on the radio.
anyway, I'll behave. I'm sorry.
No, please don't. So, Theodore, what I really want to hear, honestly, and I think our audience would love to hear too,
mm-hmm.
is how, because you took this thing and ran with it. I mean, all of a sudden you went from, in your mind, I think, being a fairly obscure writer. You know, I mean, you live in Manhattan. You're not obscure. I mean, you're all over the place. You're very busy locally. You're busy with your church. You're busy with Toastmasters. But you got this out in a national, international kind of a way. And I have to say, you did it in pretty short order. And I think what our audience would love to hear is some of the steps that you took to get this out of your heart and soul onto paper and then into the hands of the people who need it and will continue to need it, and how you started networking with some huge names, you know, authors, self-help people. I mean, you kind of went from, you know, your Manhattan home to all over the place. Can you share that journey?
Oh, absolutely. And it was on purpose, actually.
I know.
And the first thing I realized was what I didn't know. And I did not know how to write a book, because after you jump up and down and say, well, you know, you puff your chest out and you're like, yeah, I'm going to write a book. And then you realize, well, I don't know how to write a book. And so I started doing some research on, you know, how you write some books, started doing some things online in terms of looking people up who were talking about writing books in 30 days or getting organized to write books, and just really start to self-educate about both the writing process and self-publishing, and which is, you know, really how I started coming across people like Jack Canfield, because he does speak to that to mm-hmm. a great degree. And so I started reading that and going to some of the trade shows that are related to publishing, like Book Expo America that comes to New York, and then certain shows that specialize in self-publishing. And so I started to learn a lot. And then I sat down and wrote an outline, which I didn't know there was such a thing before I started researching.
Right.
And I had to go through that process a couple of times, and, you know, my editor...
I still have those outlines.
Do you still? Well, get rid of them.
I do.
I'll wait till I'm long gone.
I think they should be part of your war journal.
Oh, my God. I don't even want to laugh at myself by thinking about it. But anyway. So I wrote an outline that finally made sense. And then I wanted to use the Book of Proverbs for a very specific reason, because I knew it was accessible to the average person, just like it was accessible to me, because as I mentioned, I was not a Bible-based person at that point. And oddly enough, when I started really researching what the Book of Proverbs was about and how it was really written for people who were open to faith-based concepts, or who were who had faith that they followed. In this case, it comes out of the Judeo Christian tradition, but it was made for those folks so they understand how to balance their life with their faith-based beliefs and the practical nature of it. So it's really
right.
Perfect for the ordinary person, because there's a lot of wisdom. If it is laid out correctly, there's a tremendous amount of learning and wisdom that you can take through your life with you. And the first one is vision. I had to have that vision at first.
Can I interrupt just a second here?
Sure.
One of the big conversations that I remember we had, and I think this is very important, is that it's not necessarily all about Christian living or faith-based. This is a primer for common sense, pure and simple.
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
that was very important.
Yeah, as a Christian, you can grasp it because it's in your Bible. As a Jew or a Muslim, you can grasp it. You know, and then just from a common sense perspective, these concepts you see to greater or lesser degrees throughout many traditions,
right?
Across the major religions, right? Because I'm not a religious expert, but across the major religions that I'm somewhat familiar with. So these are concepts that work, but they are things that we don't necessarily do because of the lack of discipline in our lives, and in some cases the lack of knowledge. And so what I did was, once I had that mission and vision clear of what I wanted to go about doing, then I started setting the goals of writing a certain amount every morning, because I was working at the time. And I was,
right.
And instead of getting overwhelmed with, oh, how am I going to write a book, I started saying, I'm going to write for 30 minutes this morning, because I've got two mornings this week I can do it, or something of that nature. And I'm going to do that, and then on the weekend I'll spend 2 hours. So it was incremental, and that is like I call it the drip method. If you are dedicated to doing certain things incrementally, eventually the project is complete.
Right, and you were absolutely on target with that too. You were, once you made that decision to do those hours and those days, you did it.
Absolutely, and it wasn't always easy, because you have plenty of distractions. But setting the goals of getting certain things done, it makes it easier. It made it easier to work with you. Made it easier to work with the with the editor and the publisher. And then once you as the creator of the work is disciplined and fairly steady in what you're producing, it makes it easier for the people that you're trying to work with and delegate parts of the effort to, because they become used to the rhythm of what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did that, and I had to actually come to grips with what I didn't know as I went along, and had to work with people like yourself to get that out, because it's an evolution. It's not a science where every single thing you do is correct. We had to try things and then back up from them and redo
right.
them, and sometimes that gets frustrating, but that's part of it, of doing it. And then eventually the book was published, and I'll be honest with the audience, I actually did not do that much with it in the first 6 months that I had it, because I realized I really didn't understand the marketing of the book. So the next part of the journey began, which was understanding how to properly market it, because you can go broke with bad marketing ideas.
Oh, yeah. Big, big and quick.
Oh, yeah. And everything that seems very obvious and very easy, that people say, oh, yeah, 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 social media, no problem. Well, you know what? There is no problem if you know exactly what you're doing.
Well, and there's no science to social media, so it can be a hit and miss. And I deal in social media every day, but let me tell you what is key, and this is what you've done so brilliantly, is customer engagement. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they're already your customers. You have to attract people, you have to attract that audience, you have to consistently be in touch with them, and you have to engage with them, which does not mean beat them over the head and say, buy my book. Yeah, customer. It has to be all about the people who are your audience, and I think a lot of people who are engaging in social media don't quite get that yet. But we'll talk about that too. I just wanted to kind of get that thought out, and we can circle back around to it.
No, and it's 100% right. And the I came up with multiple strategies, and one of the things that you will hear in terms of marketing your book is that you need to be a good speaker. And that is true if you want to sell your book from the platform.
Mm-hmm.
You do need to be a good speaker. It becomes easier. I despite having done well on Amazon, I sell most of my books primarily in person, from speaking. And I enjoy that, too, so that probably comes through that I enjoy
right.
talking about
it. It does. So. It does. I've seen clips of you on stage, and you just love it there.
Yeah. Well,
and audience responds to that.
I get the butterflies because I'm like, oh man, I got to get out there and let me think, let me remember what I'm going to say. but yeah, I do most of my selling from there and through the and through the website. But most importantly, and you actually touched on this, and I'll touch on this too, because it's one of the things that you actually made me aware of. I don't know if you realize it or not, but you actually have to create a persona for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to recognize this when people would say, oh, I saw your post. It was sometimes it was blog posts, but many times it's articles that I repurposed in terms of reposting, across whether it was LinkedIn or Facebook or something. They say, oh, yeah, well, I read the article you posted.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, you did?
And then but you were becoming a resource.
I didn't realize that people were really, because, someone didn't like it or something, or acknowledge that they read it. I didn't know they read it. And then sometimes people would say, "Oh, yeah, I don't know if you know or not, but we're connected." We are. So, and I'm not being facetious because I've got many thousands of connections on LinkedIn and similarly on Facebook, and I'm not even exploiting them, truly to the nth degree like some social media experts do. And then on Twitter, many thousands of connections. Mm-hmm. So I'm always posting things, and the people that are engaged with me can follow me, even if they're not necessarily buying anything from me at this point, because it's a community. I'm treating it as a community where I'm posting, and then they're posting, or other people are posting, and I'm reading. Otherwise, I couldn't repost.
Here's the thing. At that point, and I remember having this conversation with you now that you bring it up, because you were not branding as yourself at the time. You were branding under your business persona. And
right.
I remember we had several in-depth conversations about that, and I said, you can't do that. You've got to brand under you. You are the person who is offering all this. You are the resource. Yeah, and you did. And now you're branded under your own name, and people definitely recognize you, and they do look to you for advice and for resources. They may not necessarily purchase your book right away, but they may refer it to other people. So when you treat your community, so to speak, as friends and neighbors, you can only get ahead. When you treat them like they're numbers and they must buy from you, you are setting off that poker bat goes up. I don't know about you. My spidey sense goes off and I'm out. Like, if you are going to bombard me with sales garbage, I will block you. It's just that simple. People have to learn to know you, like you, and trust you. And that's what I think you did that first 6 months before you really got active selling that book
building
that community, the know, like, and trust factor.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll share a quick story with you. Because around that same time, we were probably having this discussion, or maybe even right before, but I didn't quite get it. I was in contact through work with people who were utilizing social media and content-related conferences and associations, or heading them up, rather. And so I was at one. And, for those that attended, the guy that had organized it was very clear. There, people on the panel who are invited to speak, we want you to share knowledge. We'll post how to contact you after the fact. We want you to share what you came here to share. And this is not an opportunity to do an infomercial.
Mm-hmm.
And the first person that went off script, the organizer of the conference was in the audience sitting in front, personally got up and led the booze. When the person started an infomercial, he led the booth and then sat back down and said, okay, now continue. But you know what? When you actually shared your advice about what you were right, your advice about the branding, that's also part of it. Do not treat the community as a place to come just shill and throw out product pitches, because that's not going to get you anywhere. It's always about sharing, and when the time is correct, and if it fits the needs of the people in the audience, they may buy something if you have if you have something that fits, and that's really all you can ask of people.
And that's exactly right.
In reverse.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it does. That's exactly right. And here's the thing, and I believe this and you believe this, we've talked about this as well over the years. The more people you help, the more people will help you. It's just that simple.
Absolutely. Absolutely that simple. And it is, you know, and actually it's a Proverbs quote, Proverbs 11:24, you know, one man gives freely yet gains even more, and another withholds unduly but comes to poverty. So
again, common sense.
Right in. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you would think it, you know, oh, that's in there? Yeah. Anyway, I'm sorry. I got off on a tangent. But
we do this all the time.
I thought someone leading a chorus of blues. I was just so impressed. But, you know, they do it online, too. You just don't hear them.
Well, so let's go back to after the 6 months, which I'm kind of calling your marinating period.
Mm-hmm.
To be, you know, I look back at that and think, okay, he got the book out. He was resting. You were also, I think, a little bit worried. Now what? You know, oh my God, now what?
Well, at
this
point, I started to have a better understanding of the type of people I was looking for. And, you know,
I remember that too, because at one point we were scattered. Well, we weren't. But there was like, okay, these people are my audience, and these people are my audience, and we had to narrow that. We had some conversations about exactly about who really wants and needs this book. And you know, here's the common thing: you know, people will say, you know, when I'm talking with somebody about, okay, what is your niche or niches? Everybody, no, it's not. And we had those same conversations. Okay, who is it?
And you think, well, you think as a person creating something that, oh, yeah, this is for everybody. Well, it's not.
No.
And my
you
audience,
want it to be, it's not.
Well, and truthfully, my audience tends to be primarily female, open to faith-based and spiritual concepts, but also tends to be decently, when I say decently educated, at a minimum, high school, and most likely a college degree, of some type, you know, BA or whatever, and tends to be that. And then secondarily, it tends to be men of a similar type profile. They can be open to biblical and Christian tradition, but not necessarily. So it's really the connection tends to be the desire to utilize faith-based spiritual tools to enhance one's life, as opposed to coming down on one side or another to argue about whose religion is best. And so the audience tends to be that. And so I speak very well at what might be called New Agey type conferences, but also very well in church, because I will sometimes do my talk about the book in a church environment. And once I started narrowing down who the audience was, because I realized that I had written the book really at that point, just sharing the techniques and that worked for me, and that would and using examples, real world examples of people, places, and things. Once I narrowed the audience down, it became easier for me then to actually sell the book as a business person, because I was talking to the right people.
Mm-hmm.
Which is amazing, isn't it?
It makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, and those are the audiences that still support me and that I speak to.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is about understanding the audience. So anyway, I wanted to digress. I just wanted to make that point for the authors out there.
No, it's a great point, because too often you'll have this book idea, you'll get it out, and there it sits. Marketing is important. Understanding your audience is important. But number one, marketing is important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So how in the world did you happen to meet Jack Canfield? And for those of you who may not know who Jack Canfield is, he is the author, co-author, I believe, of the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, or started it. What is the story about him?
Well,
I have several of those books. You'd think I'd know.
Let me just quickly say, most people have heard his name, but Jack is the co-author of the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, which is more than one book. The original book was Chicken Soup for the Soul. And he co-authored that with Mark Victor Hansen, who some of the people may have heard of also. And they're both very big in this field, even though they do slightly different things and write with other people also. And so Chicken Soup for the Soul series is multiple number of books. There's a Chicken Soup for the Teenage Soul and Chicken Soup for That Soul and such. And what was interesting about him was I read about his journey or their journey to get the book published, because they had a lot of rejections. You don't realize that now, but they had a lot of rejections. And they had to really come up with ways of thinking outside the box to get the book in front of people, because even for people like them, we see them as mega authors now.
Oh,
but that
yeah.
wasn't the case when they first started. they were nobody also. So, and
yes, we all start out as nobody, don't we?
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah. And I was listening to his series called The Success Principles, which I'm a big fan of, and have with his blessing incorporated some of that into what I teach. But he mentioned that the infamous OJ trial.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? During the infamous OJ trial, they saw an opportunity because he had a sequestered jury, and he mentions this actually in one of the recordings, and they sent them books. They sent books to the jury.
And I did not know that.
How many people are watching that trial every day? And they're sitting there with a Jack Canfield book and a Mark.
Look, I watched that trial. I was absolutely fascinated and appalled by that trial.
Yeah. So people are riveted. And for various reasons, for both of the reasons that you just mentioned. And, but those were the type of things that they thought through. And so, make a long story short, I thought that, you know what, I need to learn from people who have been there and done that, because that Chicken Soup for the Soul series, they've depending on how you want to measure it, is somewhere close to the half a billion, with a B.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Books that have been printed and sold and distributed, you know, around the world, in almost every country, including China, right? So it's an amazing series, and I was on his marketing list and got an opportunity to attend some events where he was speaking, and got an opportunity to meet him, and then took advantage of another opportunity where he had smaller groups come in that he could mentor and coach.
Oh.
And it was eye-opening, because you learned that people like him, both him and Mark Victor Hansen, are people that are looking. They're looking for opportunities to help and give back.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh,
they,
I don't
they
doubt
want to do it the right
bit.
Way.
Oh,
yeah,
right.
And so they were very, you know, they were very forthcoming and straightforward, giving you the, you know, because they don't have any axe to grind. They don't need you to become successful. They're already successful. So you're getting clear, straight advice from them about what to do and how to do
mm-hmm.
it. And I just thought it was great that they were sharing like that, and so when the, you know, when the schedule and the budget permits, I try to take advantage of working with them or people like them.
And
through them, or through my association with them, I've met other people who you'll see me being interviewed with at my site, or I've interviewed or have my photo taken of them. And so I learned how to market in that way, by modeling people, taking some courses, throwing out what didn't work, and staying with what did work and with who did work. I guess
right.
is probably up.
And you took the opportunity to put yourself in front of opportunity.
Well, you know, you have to invest in yourself, and this
mm-hmm.
is something that I tell people that I coach and that I speak to. You have to self-invest. The world is not running around looking to invest in you if you are not looking to invest in you. And whether you have 2 pennies that you're investing in yourself or 2 million, you need to understand how to do that, but you also need to be willing to do it. And it's not as easy as it sounds, because we're not necessarily taught that.
No,
how to self-invest, how to do things that are going to propel you forward. We are more taught to not write not rock the boat. And a lot of what I talk about in the book is having to go swim against that tide for the purpose of your career and your business, but also for the purpose of your family and your relationships, strengthening the right type of relationships, getting the right kind of advice on what to do and how to maintain relationships, both spouse, family, and friends and community. And, sometimes the bad advice sounds great. And I refer in the book as fools and mockers, which is more the biblical term, but it fits. Because foolish advice sometimes sounds very good initially, sounds like the easy way out. But generally in life, for the average person, there is no easy way out.
There shouldn't be, really, I don't think. I mean, if it's just too easy, why bother?
If it's too easy and too obvious, it probably is too easy and too obvious. It doesn't work.
Yeah. I don't think life is meant to be really, really easy. I mean, what would the point be? But that's just me.
No, that's just us.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, there you go.
That's just us. So, as I talk about this, that's really, I'm sharing concepts that are actually in the book itself. I just expand on them. But it really is a book about life and journeys, about a lot about the mistakes that I've made that are very similar to the mistakes that other people have made, of the other challenges. I made plenty of bonehead decisions. But then it's also about how
I don't know anybody
back,
that hasn't.
Well, you know what? The thing becomes not haven't you done it, but what's your reaction to it?
Yeah.
How do you come back from making the mistakes and become better at it, and become better at what you do and live better and live on purpose? And see, that's the key, because many times we get seduced into not doing the right thing. If you want to become a doctor, you need to go to medical school. You can't do it with cheese doodles on the couch. You got to get up. You got to get moving. But you may be sitting, but your friends may be there on the couch.
I know.
And if that's the case, then you have to make a decision. You're going to stay on the couch, or you're going to hit the books and go to medical school.
Right. Larry Wingate. Do you know who Larry Wingate is?
Yes.
Okay, I was listening to him yesterday on Break a Record with Susan, which is this huge event that I was part of for the last couple of days. She literally broke an online record for the longest uninterrupted webcast, 36 hours. 36
wow.
hours. She had some great speakers. Larry Wingate was one of them. Michael E. Gerber was one of them. But Larry Wingate said something that I thought was so important, was that basically your income is probably the average of your five closest friends. So if you're sitting on the couch eating cheese doodle with your five closest friends, you've probably got nothing much in the bank, would be my guess.
Well, that is true. We are what we eat and who we associate with.
Yes, we are. Absolutely.
And if we're associating with people who are go nowhere, nothing happening, unless you're a missionary coming to save them, you are probably go nowhere, nothing happening until you make a decision to move on from them. Mm-hmm. And that becomes the key. That's why the modeling is so important. I tell, because I consider myself a solopreneur, even though I will work with folks like you and your organization, Denise.
Mm-hmm.
I basically work a solo until I need help to create something and to distribute something or market something or sell something.
Right.
And what I find is that's why I go to a lot of conferences, participate in masterminds, get coaching and mentoring from the right kind of people, and then subsequently give coaching and mentoring to people. Because it's almost like a cycle of life. If you are not engaged in that way, you're not getting the feedback from the world that you need. And if you're not getting that feedback, you can't be successful, because you can't make decisions in a way that will enhance. You tend to then make the wrong decision more so than the right one, and not be able to bounce back from the wrong one. So it is
important. Go ahead, I'm sorry. Go ahead,
no,
I'm sorry.
You just said something
that we do this. We get on the phone and we just go, okay, me first, me, because We have so much to say to each other and listen, you know, from each other. We really do have a lot of fun. Here's the thing. You said something just now that is so, so important about being a solopreneur, an entrepreneur, mm-hmm. whatever you want to call yourself. We cannot exist in a vacuum. We just can't. I mean, it's easy to say, well, I can do all this on my own. You know, I know how to do this. I can learn HTML. I can learn WordPress. I can learn social media. You can, and in many cases, you should. But you should also do exactly what you're doing, and you're in the perfect spot in the world. Do that, New York, Manhattan, because a lot of these venues come to you. I live between two sugarcane fields. They don't come to my part of the country. But I go online, and I seek these opportunities. And I have met, just by being online, some of the most remarkable people. And I've taken part in mentorships. I'm creating the mentorships for virtual assistants and online business managers. I educate myself constantly. So just because you may live in a small village, mm-hmm. as I do in Southwest Louisiana, waiting for a hurricane to come any day, doesn't matter where you are. People and opportunities are everywhere. And we should take advantage of them every day. Every day.
Oh, absolutely. I think I can't say it any better than that. You take the opportunities as they are presented.
Yes.
You know, always be on the lookout.
Don't think about them sometimes. Just go do them.
Sometimes you just need to go from the gut.
Yeah.
Made famous, that phrase made famous by Jack Welch of GE, former chairman of GE. But sometimes mm-hmm. it's from the gut. Sometimes you just need to, you know what, this is the right thing to do. And sometimes that gut feeling, coming from an educated person, not necessarily school education, but educated in understanding opportunity when it presents itself. They've learned over time that, you know what, it makes sense. I didn't necessarily want to spend that money to go spend time with this person who is an expert in the field of publishing or authoring or social media or kayaking or whatever it is. But I'm going to do it because it's important to me to advance that way.
Absolutely. And there's just no excuses anymore. I mean, there's a lot of free stuff that you can do. If it's a good place to start, do it. If you don't want to spend $2,000 to enroll in a 6-week course, don't do that. But there are a lot of other opportunities. You know, just reach out to people. And we have talked about this in the past, and please excuse my voice. I was doing a lot of hooting and hollering over the last 2 days. One thing about solopreneurs, entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. people like us, we want you to succeed. We are very willing to help you out. And oftentimes, people will approach you, people you know, like me, and say, I just don't have a budget, but could I ask you a question? You bet. We will take the time to help.
Absolutely. I'm always happy to, give some advice to people to get them started.
Mm-hmm.
As business purpose people, we're not going to do 10 hours of free coaching. That doesn't make sense. But certainly if someone has some questions, I mean, I do, even though I get paid to coach people on career and small business, I also volunteer to do that for my local library system. And I will volunteer and go in a couple of hours or so a week and coach some people who don't necessarily have the budget or the knowledge of what to do to get them started on how to do a job search or make the choice between working for someone else or maybe starting their own small business. And I learn a lot from that because you open the field to even dramatically more people that you're coming in contact with. And it's amazing how many people will sit down in front of me who, in those types of coaching sessions or some others, that say, "Well, you don't remember. I saw you speak at such and such a place, and I wanted to ask you
right.
that." Right. Yeah, when I give a speech, I don't cut it short. I actually share real information with folks so that it can be of some benefit to them. I don't make it. I remember that lesson. Don't make it an infomercial. Give the folks some substance. I don't want to hear the booze.
Well,
I'm sorry.
One thing, I think we talked about this too at one time. We talked about so much over the years, but I know we were talking about stage presence, you know, how you really, really connect with an audience. And the important word there is connect. And I think we discovered, partly because you do some of this, but partly just through doing some research, that the most impressive and the most well thought of speakers are not on the stage talking at you. They're taking that microphone and they're down in the audience talking with you. They're connecting with you. And I think that's how you truly do business. You connect.
Well,
you
know,
you're not just selling something, you're connecting. You're helping.
I want to share something with some of the author speakers or trainers out there who may be a little frustrated with their delivery or worried about it. First thing is, be yourself.
Yes.
Because if you're a cookie-cutter speaker who's worrying about their hands being not, you know, being 6 inches apart in front of them, or if they're going to have make some humor, they're going to roll their eyes over, and blah, 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 blah. Be yourself. People are there not to see an assembly line of drones. They are there to engage with people on the stage. So be yourself. Be professional. Certainly practice your craft. But you know what? If you, some of the best speakers I know speak with a lisp. Right? And they're up on stage and people are roaring and clapping and the rest of it. And so don't worry about if you have a lisp. And and you know, if you have another, if you have you know, some other little tics or quirks, use it to your advantage.
Right.
You know, don't make it a distraction. Make it an enhancement to what you do. So take what you do and make it a strength. And so don't worry about being perfect. Worry about what you're going to do that's going to be to the benefit of the audience, that's going to actually allow you to connect with them, but actually give them something, to give them some part of what of you or your experience is going to be beneficial. And I'll be the first one to tell you that I will get some speaker coach or someone, because there are a lot of coaches floating around, that will say, you walked across the audience, you walked across the stage too much, your hands were moving around too much, blah, blah, blah. I said, but you know what? The people gave me a rousing ovation and they were taking
notes.
There
you go.
That's all it worked for.
That's
happy.
Exactly
they
right.
Came to, and they came to the back of the room and bought product because they understood, at least in my belief, they understood that I was actually sincere about what I was trying to share with them. So
mm-hmm.
I'm not worried about if I walk too far past the mark on the stage. I'm worried about if I went off topic and didn't give the audience something that was beneficial.
I know. And that's just it. It has to be the audience reaction. I mean, that's how you gauge the level of success of your message, not how you appear, not if your shoes are shiny or if your tie is perfectly knotted in a Windsor knot. The level of engagement is what is so, so critical.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Be there. Be in the moment. You know what? If you get a couple of lines out of your 30-minute speech, keep going, because you're the only one that knows you forgot a couple of lines. Keep moving.
That's right.
Give them the meat of the message. Don't worry about perfection. Just get out there and share. And I want to do that on purpose, because people get so much bizarre feedback about, you didn't speak this way, you didn't speak that way. You've got a book that people need or want. Get out there and share, and
that's
worry
right.
about that. Fine tune your performance after the fact.
Well, that's just it. And here's the thing: if we all worry about perfection, we'll be paralyzed. If I worried about perfection, Theodore, I would be sitting in a corner, twirling a curl on one finger and sucking my thumb. I wouldn't get a thing done. Let me think about that. Not a picture you need in your head for the weekend, is it?
That's right. The paralysis of no decision.
Okay. I know it's horrible. But anyway, listen, we have been talking a lot. We've got about 6 more minutes left. I know you say you're coaching people. Where can people find you if they're listening to this call now? Or it'll be in iTunes later, too, by the way. And the on-demand for my radio show, the on-demand is phenomenal. I'm always surprised and very touched by how many people download these things after they're over. I had a lady from – listen, I have to share this story. I was interviewing Rosalind Gardner a couple of weeks ago, and I had a lady send me an email from the U.K. Mm-hmm. And Rosalyn and I were basically just talking about having fun. Sometimes as an entrepreneur, you can't be all serious, like you and I have discussed. It can't be all about business and marketing. You have to just be you. You have to be very authentic and love what you do. And, you know, good things kind of naturally follow from that. So we were talking about just having fun being an entrepreneur. And a lady from the UK sent me the loveliest note. It was so sweet that she would download, you know, the episodes to her iPod and walk along, I think she said, the cliffs when she was walking her dog. Mm-hmm. And I thought, and you said something earlier that reminded me of that, because you don't know who's listening. You don't know who's paying attention. So now I have two fans, and I'm so excited. I have two that I can identify. But, you know, you just don't know who is going to be listening to you and how you can be of assistance to them. Just be yourself and just assume that what you are offering is from the heart, and people will respond to that.
Absolutely. I couldn't say it any better, truthfully.
Well, what I wanted to find out from you, though, is I know you're coaching with people. Where can people find you if they want to either coach with you with the book or if they want to coach with you in a business aspect?
Well, absolutely. Go to www.theodorehenderson.com. That is theodorehenderson.com. And you'll find a lot of information there. I have a media planners section, and you can look at how to reach me and contact me there, and you see some of my speaking, little short excerpts on my speaking there. You can also connect from that site to my special career site called the Intelligent Career Manager, and also to the book site, as I mentioned before, the Wisdom Compass. And I respond to all inquiries. In fact, anyone that's listening to this show, please put in the subject title, Denise Griffiths, and I will certainly get a little special gift to you for that, in honor of Denise.
Thank you. That is so nice.
And I have plenty of free stuff at my site, some of it courtesy of Denise from before, but I have plenty of free information, because it's really about the giving the information. So there's a lot of career information, personal development information, and just general, because I do both a written blog and a video blog. So there's a lot there, and come visit. There's no requirement that you have to be on my mailing list or something. If you want to be, I'm happy to intelligently share, but there's still information there that you can access without doing any of that. So that's the best way to get me, right through the site. I will answer your emails. Just make sure you put Denise Griffiths in the subject header, and I will certainly respond even quicker than normal.
And you can spell Griffiths any old way you want. Griffiths, Griffin, Griffitis, it doesn't matter. Just
that's right. As long as if it's some kind of Griffiths at the end of the name, then I'll answer.
Nobody can spell it. I'm convinced that my in-laws made it up. But listen, one thing I do know about the Wisdom Compass, and I watched this, I learned it from you, it helps you tap into your own inner voice to make those choices that are best for you. And I think that is the beauty of the Wisdom Compass. It's so elegant.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Well, I love the book. I absolutely love the book, and I'm just so proud that you wrote it and that it is where it is. I mean, I know you mentioned earlier that you were ranked as a bestseller, but what category is it?
It was in Christian Living, and still is in Christian Living, and also shows up in self-development. Those categories are much easier to find, and it's hard to get found. You know, I'm proud that people can find it, because it's hard to get found in Amazon.
I know it is, and I think that's huge.
Yes, and I'm very proud of that. That was a great moment, particularly as a first-time author, and so I'm enjoying that I actually have that little tag next to my name.
Well, yeah. You know, it's so funny because Julia, my assistant, did some of the transcription for the book, and she sent me a note this morning. She goes, I need I need an autographed copy. Where do I get one? I said, well, I think I know him. Let me see what I can do for you. So I am going to be shooting you a request for an autographed copy from my assistant.
Not a problem. Just let me know where to send it.
Oh, thank you. Well, listen, Theodore, thank you so much for being with me here today. I love chatting with you. I love it. I always have. You have just always kind of lift my day up, and you've given our audience some really great information. I know they appreciate it. I always do.
Well, any time I can talk to someone down in the land of Louisiana with all that good Cajun cooking, I'm all for it.
Oh, you need to come over here for the 4th of July. We are going to blow the socks off of this neighborhood.
I'll bet you all will.
We will.
Let me put on Zydeco tunes in the background then.
There you go. What are you doing for the 4th very quickly? You have plans?
I actually haven't even thought. I'm just so glad that I'm not going to be working starting tomorrow for a few days. That in New York, there is so much to do. We have a lot of free outdoor concerts and free performances. We have a thing here called River to River, which along the various points along the river in New York, they will hold concerts with different artists that are really actually name artists. And so I'll probably be doing some combination of that, riding the bike, and enjoying some cold white wine under the nice, hot summer sky. So.
Well, enjoy, and I look forward to reading your blog and seeing some pictures of all of that.
Oh, no pictures of the lampshade. Nope.
Oh, come on. Well, darn. Well, listen, everybody, thank you so much for being here. The show will be available for download in about an hour. And this is Denise Griffiths and the fabulous Theodore Henderson wishing you a wonderful weekend and a safe and very happy 4th of July. And thank you, everybody. Thank you, Theodore.
Thanks, everyone. Be blessed.
Bye.